Hi, I'm Mark Brody, and this is the Friday Newscap Podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
I've had the chance to work with him directly on many issues and have seen firsthand his dedication to the American people. And I know the governors know what it takes to deliver for their states, and I am confident that Governor Walz and Vice President Harris will deliver for Arizona.
She is very familiar with what Rudy Giuliani and other national figures were doing during that time frame. And we think that she provides additional and different information.
Time has come for us as Arizona Republicans to admit the obvious and to start saying the quiet part out loud, which is that our party's nominee is not qualified for office.
Congressman Gallego and I definitely don't agree on everything. But I'm standing here, and we're all standing here, because we care about the future of our great state. We care about the character of our leaders, and because we want a better future for our kids.
So hopefully, with the history of his previous recusals and the long history of his many problematic statements about this organization and this case, that he'll do the right thing here again.
And joining me to talk about new developments in the case of the so-called fake electors, VP Kamala Harris picking her running mate and the two of them campaigning in Arizona and more, are Chip Scutari of SNC Communications. Good morning, Chip.
Happy Friday.
And Sam Richard of Consilium Consulting. Sam, good to see you.
Great to be here.
So let's start, Sam, and I'll start with you on Tim Walz, the governor of Minnesota, becoming Kamala Harris's running mate. The two of them will be in Glendale this afternoon, for a rally after sort of barnstorming through a number of Midwestern states. Specifically for Arizona, does Walz help Harris in this state at all, do you think?
I think absolutely and clearly, not only on a personal level. I'm a son of two public school teachers who graduated from the University of Minnesota. So I think that I'm not unique in the fact that it's a lot easier to shovel the sun. So a lot of our early migratory patterns were folks that came from the Midwest. So I think that Governor Walz's affect and his approach to policy, his approach to being a good neighbor and a decent man, filled with some memorable quips and joy and hope along for the ride, is going to really resonate well here in Arizona.
Chip, what do you think? Does Walz help? I mean, obviously the sort of the conventional wisdom with a running mate is do no harm, right? Like, you
exactly
don't want them to mess things up for the top of the ticket. Does he help Harris in Arizona? Does he potentially cause harm here?
I think he does a great help in balancing the ticket. Vice President Harris has not won a solo campaign when it's just been her in the ballot outside of the liberal bastion of California. So I think Tim Walz, with the kind of aw shucks Midwestern dad vibe, really balances that out. I think he can help with white working class folks. And I think, you know, if you think of Donald Trump versus Governor Walz, you know, Donald Trump may be that leaf blower that you're hearing over and over, which I do on my morning walks. I hear leaf blowers, I'm like, oh. And compare that to Tim Walz. He may be your neighbor who, when you go on vacation, you say, hey, Tim, can you mow my lawn? You know, he's got that aw shucks kind of personality, but he's also super smart and he's been engaged and done a lot of different things in his career. And I think just objectively looking at it, you know, the Democrat base coalition is back since Kamala Harris got in the race and President Biden stepped down. The electoral map has shifted. Arizona, Georgia, Nevada are now in play. So they're riding momentum. You can't – I mean, I think Republicans, even the biggest Trump supporters, would admit they have the energy, they have the momentum now. Can they keep it until Election Day, or at least until early voting starts, is the big challenge right now.
Well, so how much, Chip, do you think Arizona is in play now that the race is set, we assume, between now and November? You know, because earlier when President Biden was in the race, Arizona was – the polls were showing it was not – particularly close, mm-hmm. that former President Trump was pretty far ahead here. Do you really think Arizona is in play now for Vice President Harris?
I do. I think it'll be super close, you know, one on the margins like it was in 2020. I don't know if it'd be as close as 10,457 votes or whatever it was in 2020. But I do think it's in play. And I think Walz, you know, whatever, you know, people go after his record being too progressive with, you know, things he did in Minnesota that may not play in rural Arizona. But I think he's kind of a natural campaigner. And the one thing you notice just looking at it objectively is him and the vice president seem to get along. They're so different. They come from two way different parts of the country. Mm-hmm. But they seem to just generally get along. You can tell on stage – candidates are awkward, you know, but they seem to, you know, have a genuine embrace. They seem to get along. And I think he'll be a great balance of the ticket. And I think, and we've all seen in presidential campaigns, whether it's Barack Obama, Ronald Reagan, or Donald Trump, personalities do trump policy. So nerds like us will re-examine and vet their policies. Most Joe Sixpack and Jane Sixpack out there aren't going to know every policy that they support or don't support.
Absolutely. And I'd rather share a six-pack with Governor Walz and Vice President Harris than the folks on the other ticket. Absolutely. And I think another important, you know, thing to enter into the conversation here is that, you know, we talk a lot about different voting blocks and kind of how they ebb and flow. You know, Democrats running for president have lost fewer rural counties since Clinton in 92 in every subsequent presidential election. Hmm. So I think having someone who represented rural southern Minnesota and has that affect coming onto the presidential ticket, I think that you're going to see some of that reversal that Republican candidates and especially in Trump have kind of dug into in rural counties. And I think you'll see that play out here in Arizona too.
Well, Sam, let me ask you, because obviously Mark Kelly, Arizona senator, Arizona's junior senator, was on the short list of finalists to be Vice President Harris's running mate. And there was some conversation that Kelly might be able to help Harris with what seems to be, at least based on what Republicans are talking about right now, kind of a weak point, which is the border and her role in trying to deal with the border, whatever you want to call her actual title. Do you think that Walz is able to in any way help with that? Or maybe do you consider potentially a missed opportunity to not select Mark Kelly and sort of try to shore up that potential weakness?
Yeah, I mean, despite my Minnesota homerism, you know, Arizona is home and I'm proud of it. So obviously, I think that it was a missed opportunity in some senses. But, you know, the fact that Senator Kelly was an important part of the conversation shows how important Arizona is going to be to this ticket. And I think also because of the strength and the early momentum that the Harris ticket has shown, you had an opportunity to kind of think further ahead. And I think that Senator Kelly is going to be an important voice in a very tight U.S. Senate that supports a Harris-Walz administration.
Chip, do you think this gives Kelly a little more maybe gravitas in D.C.?
Absolutely. He was talked about for the last 2 weeks as, you know, the final three candidates for VP. But I think one of the things in D.C. or the powers that be in the Democratic National Party were worried about is if Mark Kelly was on the ticket and they won, you know, Governor Hobbs would appoint another Democrat, mm-hmm. but they'd be up for a re-election or they'd have to run for election in 2026. And that could be a dicey proposition. You know, Mark Kelly's a pretty special candidate with a very unique bio, being a fighter pilot and astronaut. So I don't know how much that came into play, but I'm sure it did somewhat.
We've already had that an exhausting series of, what is it, 5 or 6 U.S.
Let's
Senate
keep
elections,
the streak going.
Right?
Come on. We're going to miss it next time. So, Chip, last point on the presidential race. I want to ask you about the Republicans for Harris group. We heard a clip from Mesa Mayor John Giles just a moment or two ago. It would seem that, you know, the sort of the conventional wisdom is for a Democrat to win in Arizona, you need Republican votes. I mean, how broad-based do you anticipate this coalition is going to be? And will it be enough to really help Vice President Harris?
Yeah, as I mentioned before, you know, this election is going to be super tight, one on the margins. But I think a popular mayor of Arizona's third largest city, like Mayor Giles of Mesa, can really help in the East Valley. And if you look at the election results between Kerry Lake and Pinal County Sheriff Mark Lamb in the Senate race, mm-hmm. the one area where he did better than her is the East Valley. So if Mayor Giles and, you know, former McCain advisors like Paul Hickman, the CEO of the Arizona Bankers Association, Bettina Nava, another close McCain advisor, if they get out and really campaign hard in the East Valley for Harris, that could help put her over the top. And there's an excellent story in Axios about how the LDS voters, Mormon voters,
yeah.
could help swing this elections in a few key places across the country. So we'll have to pay attention to that.
Yeah, Sam, how do you anticipate the Harris-Walz ticket trying to appeal to maybe the McCain Republicans that, as Chip said, could be key in you know, determining whether the Democrats or Republicans win Arizona?
Yeah, I think to kind of build on what Chip was saying earlier, I think that more and more of the last few election cycles, especially in kind of a Trump-dominated world, you're seeing political conversations focus less on which team jersey you're wearing and kind of what you care more about. And I think that this idea of Republicans for Harris has a lot more to do with the joy and hope and decency that that ticket is bringing versus kind of the charred earth vision of America that the Trump-Vance ticket is seeming to purport.
All right. So, guys, let me ask you about another pretty significant story this week. That is a couple of developments in the so-called fake electors case that the Arizona Attorney General's office is working on. We saw that a former Trump attorney, Jenna Ellis, took a plea deal to cooperate with prosecutors. We then saw another of the so-called fake electors plead guilty to a lesser charge. Sam, how significant are these in this overall case?
I think it's incredibly significant because it could be the start or the tip of, you know, a kind of an avalanche that starts to come down in terms of momentum in this, and just continue to be impressed with every move that Attorney General Mays makes in this case and you know, showing herself as a fantastically capable litigator.
Chip, Jenna Ellis had also taken a similar deal in, I believe, Georgia and another state where there's a similar case. I would imagine that prosecutors believe, and we heard Attorney General May say it, that she has information that could really help make this case for them.
Yeah, I mean, most Americans, they're familiar probably with Jenna Ellis because she was standing right behind Rudy Giuliani when he had his hair dye meltdown. When it was coming down the side of his face. It was pretty frightening stuff. So, yeah, she was right at the top. She was working hand in glove with Rudy Giuliani, who was the personal attorney for former President Donald Trump. So I think this is a huge deal, just to build on what Sam said, because it's harder for these other defendants to say this is a political witch hunt when one of their co-defendants has admitted to committing these crimes. So it's a big deal. Now, Jenna Ellis has to deliver the goods or mm-hmm. else she could be in big trouble. You know, they're going to waive, you know, all her felonies. But my legal experts tell me that if she doesn't or says anything wrong or, you know, doesn't bring the goods, that she could be in trouble and they could reinstitute those felonies against her. So she's got a lot to do. She's got a lot of big responsibility on her shoulders.
And Chip, in terms of Lorraine Pellegrino, one of the other so-called fake electors pleading guilty, does that seem like a significant development in trying to figure out what actually happened and try to get some prosecutions if you're the Attorney General's office?
Absolutely. I mean, we've seen this in big cases like this. The first to flip, you know, this, you know, Lorraine Pellegrino and Jenna Ellis, they usually get the best deals, you know, the sweetheart deals, so to speak. So I got to think these other co-defendants, you know, like Jake Hoffman and others, are probably really worried behind the scenes because they know that Jenna Ellis is going to spill the goods on them. And I think what Sam said, the AG's office is doing a good job of building this case brick by brick and not reaching too far too fast.
Sam, let me start with you about a judge ruling that the summary that supporters of the Abortion Access Initiative put with their signature petitions was not misleading, allowed it to stay on the ballot for now. This ruling, it seems as though, is going to be appealed. This is, of course, just one of the areas of litigation around this initiative. When all is said and done, do you anticipate this will be on the ballot?
Absolutely. I mean, I think much like Bon Jovi, right, and 100 million fans can't be wrong, you have a record-setting number of folks sign the petition. So it was clearly not misleading. Every legal hurdle that is grasping at straws from anti-abortion proponents have been throwing up there has been swatted away by courts and you name it. So I think that this is going to carry this momentum all the way to victory in November, and it's going
to
happen.
So to continue your analogy, it's not living on a prayer.
No,
is what
not
you're
at
saying.
All. Not at all.
Chip, are you a little surprised that Justice Bill Montgomery decided not to recuse himself after having recused himself in a prior case over this initiative?
No, I'm not surprised. I'm really not surprised at all. But I don't know even though why we're talking about this, because yesterday at his kind of meandering press conference, Donald Trump said abortion's not a big deal in this election. So but on a serious note, you know, whatever the wording is, you know, it's going to be hashed out in court. But this is a fundamental core issue for people, whether you're for this or against it. So I think the wording, while important and critical to especially to the pro side, I don't think it will make or break it. I think the 800,000 plus people who signed this petition to get this on the ballot won't be swayed by those three words. And I agree with Sam that if it's on the ballot, it's going to pass overwhelmingly and be a big boost to the Democratic ticket.
So, Chip, let me stick with you about the Tipped Workers Protection Act. This also will, at least for now, stay on the ballot after a judge ruled that the name of the initiative was not misleading. Critics had said it might actually hurt tipped workers. This comes at the same time that a minimum wage increase withdrew their signatures, thinking that maybe they didn't have enough to survive challenges of signatures. When you talk about, you know, for example, the abortion measure helping the Democratic ticket, the border security initiative is presumed to help the Republican ticket. Does this one or the two of them potentially like have an impact on turnout or any other races, do you think?
I think the Border Security Act could if they can fund a good campaign. This one, you know, I got to say, even for us news junkies, most people don't know what the Tip Workers Protection Act is. And I read it and I've been researched it before we talked about it. It really depends on how it affects the consumers. Is this good for customers? But I think it's so down ballot and we're going to have three pages of stuff to vote on.
Yeah, it could
I don't think this is going to sway the election either way. I do think depending on how well funded the Border Security Act is, that could help Republican turn up. But this issue, I don't think will.
Sam, do you agree? Is this a little, you know, like not 1A, 1B, but sort of a B level of interest initiative?
I think that's clearly the point that I most resonated with as Chip was talking through that in terms of, you know, this is going to be a 3 or 4 page ballot. And by the time you get there, you know, you might have voters asking, you know, the person on the other side, please add a dollar for my work here. Right. So you know, you're going to look for a lot of confusion that far down the ballot. And I think that people might just abstain from even participating in that particular initiative.
So, Sam, let me ask you quickly about the minimum wage issue. The supporters of that had said they're basically going to try to get this through the legislature. Seems like they're kind of banking maybe on at least one of the chambers flipping to Democrats, because I would imagine it'd be pretty difficult to get a minimum wage increase through a Republican-controlled legislature.
I would absolutely agree with that. I think that you know, despite what I was saying earlier around a post-partisan kind of move, I think that is one of those areas where clearly Democrats want to support fair and living wages, and there's a divergent thought on the Republican side of the conversation. So I think that if the Democrats do flip a chamber, it would likely be the upper chamber in the state Senate. And if that conversation happens, then it would be a very important piece of leverage even in a shared leadership environment next session.
So, Chip, let me ask you. I always love asking people to wade into other parties' internal politics.
Sure.
The race in the 3rd Congressional District between Yasemin Ansari and Raquel Turan is going to a recount. A 42-vote margin kind of makes Chris Mays look like a landslide.
I know. Wow.
From a couple of years ago. Do you have any reason to think that Ansari, Phoenix City Council member, will not come out on top once the recount is done?
You know, in all the years I covered political campaigns or worked on campaigns or observed them, it's very rare that a recount changes the outcome. So I think, unless barring some unusual, you know, counting or something weird happening, I think, you know, Ansari will be the next congressional member from that district. And as we all know, that's a heavily D district.
Mm-hmm.
She's very young, very smart, very ambitious. She could be there probably as long as she wants. Maybe her first term, there'll be a challenge after that from another Democrat if something goes haywire. But you know, it's pretty impressive what she's accomplished at such a young age, you know, depending what you think of her partisan policies. But she's a rising star in Arizona.
Sam, are there any lessons to take from the fact that this race between two Democrats, which got a little bit testy, especially toward the end, was ultimately decided by a really, really small margin?
Yeah, and that margin for fans of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy is pretty important, right? 42 is the answer. So I think that, you know, what it told me more than anything else is that we have quality candidates up and down the ballot as Democrats to choose from. There was a highly contested race in the 1st Congressional District as well. Chip mentioned Councilwoman Ansari's impressive resume. Raquel Turan also has an incredible track record of service and a demonstrable history of great change and movement building here in Arizona as well. So I think voters in the 3rd District were well served by that conversation and choice.
Would you agree, Sam, that at the end of the day, maybe the margin won't be 42, but that Councilwoman Ansari will ultimately be the winner?
I think that if past performance is an indicator of future results, I think that it is very difficult to say that there would be a change.
Okay, so guys, we just have about a minute or two left here. I want to ask, you know, the dust from the primary has settled now, you know, a little more than a week out. Sam, what are you most looking toward for November? Like, what are you most looking to see, you know, draw signs from, or, you know, sort of divine, you know, what might happen?
Yeah, I was most intrigued by a litany of observations about how small the margin Carrie Lake had over Mark Lamb. I think that she was only going to have a fighter's chance if she crossed that 60 or 65% margin. And I think she's in real trouble, which, you know, we've always known was a possibility, but I think that was cemented on Tuesday. It's also going to be interesting that perhaps the County Board of Supervisors could be democratically held here in Maricopa County in the first time in, you know, half a century.
Yeah, I'm really interested to see, after living in Arizona all these years, where every 2 years my Democratic friends will say, we're going to flip the State House, we're going to flip the Senate. This year, let's see if the energy from the Harris-Walls ticket, if that has any momentum down ballot, and if they take either the State Senate or State House would be such a huge deal for them. But I still think it's tricky. I still think Republicans, not being partisan here, I still think they could hold the House and Senate just the way these elections hold out. And it'll be really interesting to see how the next couple of months go and if they can flip a House or Senate, because that's a big deal for Katie, Governor Hobbs, going into her reelect in 2026.
Sure. All right. Yeah. We'll have to leave it there. Chip Scutari, Sam Richard, thanks to you both for coming in. Thanks for the conversation.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's biggest stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. I'm Mark Brody. Thanks for listening.